Good morning.
Good morning.
What I'd like to speak about this morning came up last week. It resonated in me, so I'm going to say a few more words on the unanswered question, the power of the unanswered question. And I'm going to start by reading a haiku by Isa. On a branch floating down river, a cricket singing. On a branch floating down river, a cricket singing. When I read this haiku, it immediately created for me the question, where is the cricket going? Which in a sense could be a metaphor for my life, your life, our lives. Where are we going? And in the haiku, the cricket, at least in my mind's eye, seems to be rather unconcerned by questions such as, where am I going? Instead, the cricket is just fully present, singing cricket songs, floating downriver. Mary Oliver wrote the poem entitled, Some Questions You Might Ask. It's a poem that sort of sounds to me, anyway, religious. But it's interesting. Is the soul solid like iron? Or is it tender and breakable, like the wings of a moth and the beak of an owl? Who has it? And who doesn't? I keep looking around me. The face of the moose is as sad as the face of Jesus. The swan opens her white wings slowly. In the fall, the black bear carries leaves into the darkness. One question leads to another. Does it have a shape like an iceberg? Like the eye of a hummingbird? Does it have one lung like the snake and the scallop? Why should I have it and not the anteater who loves her children? Why should I have it and not the camel? Come to think of it, what about maple trees? What about the blue iris? What about all the little stones sitting along alone in the moonlight? What about roses and lemons and their shining leaves? What about grass? When I read this poem, you know, the fact that Mary Oliver provides no answers to these questions, to me, is what gives the poem its energy. I really didn't want any answers to those questions. The questions themselves were enough. So an unanswered question challenges our expectations. And if we crave linearity, we might find ourselves adrift without an answer, without a promise of truth or certainty. This is because the unanswered question provides no pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. It's a leap into the unknown. The only requirement of an unanswered question is to pay attention, to be in the now and not in the know. So the only requirement of the unanswered question is to pay attention. And this requires the courage and the confidence to take up residence in unfamiliar and uncomfortable territory. The cricket in Isa's poem is totally present in the moment, even without knowing where it will end up. This is the same challenge that the koan poses. Remember the second koan, which I've talked about on numerous occasions, from the second koan from the Book of Serenity. It's a dialogue between Jizo and Hogen. And Jizo asks Hogen, "Where are you going?" And Hogen responds, "On a pilgrimage." And Jizo says, "What's the purpose of your pilgrimage?" And Hogen answered, "I don't know." Imagine making a pilgrimage with no idea where you're going. So the unanswered question is asking us to learn how to pay attention. Be open and be patient. So the unanswered question is asking us to learn how to pay attention. And if we can't pay attention, and if we can't be open and be patient, the question will be wasted. Now, there's a wonderful story when I was writing this talk. It's really, to me, a beautiful expression of the... Could somebody turn the light on? This print is a lot smaller than I usually type. Thanks. I don't know how many of you are familiar with Lynn Jensen, but Lynn Jensen is, I'll read his little bio here, a senior Buddhist chaplain to the High Desert State Prison in Susanville, California, and founder and teacher of the Chico Zen Sangha in Chico, California, where he writes and works on behalf of nonviolence in defense of the earth. He's written a number of books, Bad Dog, Pavement, Together Under One Roof, and Deep Down Things. And these have all been published by Wisdom Publications. And this is a little story that he tells called I Don't Know, and it's excerpted from the book Pavement. It was written on January 20th, 2010. There are times on the sidewalk when I simply don't know what to do, when nothing in my experience clarifies what's happening. That's the way it was when a kid in makeshift robes, dreadlocks, and bare feet sat down with me on the pavement outside the entrance to Chico Natural Foods Co-op. He sat facing me with our knees barely a hand's width apart. We sat like this for some 10 or 15 minutes. Then he laid on the sidewalk, between our knees, a single quarter. I didn't know what this meant. Did he want money from me, displaying the quarter in the way that street beggars sometimes drop change into an upturned hat to encourage passerbys to add more? Or was he giving me a quarter? It's curious how uncomfortable it can be not to know what's going on, and how urgent the pressure can be to understand. The quarter lay there between us like an unanswered question, until finally he said, "I don't have any money with me," which was true, "so I can't give you any." When I looked up to see how he had taken this, his eyes met mine, noncommittal and perfectly steady, without disclosure of any kind. I never made any sense out of the quarter the boy with dreadlocks laid on the sidewalk. In time, he picked the quarter back up, gave a little bow in my direction, and left. And though I might speculate endlessly, I have to admit that I simply don't know what was going on. The thing is, I often don't know what's going on, even when I think I do. Persuading yourself that you know what's going on when you don't is a likely candidate for bringing harm into a situation. It's a wonderful line. Persuading yourself that you know what's going on when you don't is a likely candidate for bringing harm into a situation. The world is reeling from the impact of leaders who know what they're doing. This deluded knowing accounts for most of the worst mischief the human race is capable of. it leads to an unwarranted certainty that is synonymous in the language of Zen practice with ignorance. In Zen practice, rather than striving to have knowing answers to all questions, we choose instead to turn toward questions without answers, toward the actuality of our lives that isn't explained by the logic of subject and predicate, toward the truth that's only known in its living immediacy, unfiltered by logical persuasion. We may concoct detailed explanations to convince ourselves that we really do know what's happening, but knowing of the sort that's contrived from available evidence is always an arbitrary reduction of what's actually happening and has nothing of the depth of open-hearted not knowing. The quarter of the youth laid on the sidewalk outside Chico Natural Foods is just one more mystery in a universe of unknowns. It's a small thing, which I can modestly admit I don't understand, but it's my experience that there's good value in leaving unanswerable questions unanswered. When I don't know something for certain, and don't try to convince myself that I do, I'm held momentarily in the hand of restraint, and the world is safer for it. Without designing answers, I'm forced to hold the question open. It might seem doubtful or even absurd that the world of our understanding is unreliable, and that the possibility of peace lies not so much in what we know as in what we don't. Something I know for a certainty often solidifies into the sort of unquestioned fact that outreaches doubt and curiosity. If a question has been answered to my satisfaction, I'm not likely to see the need for further inquiry. Nations will readily go to war in defense of such an unexamined answer. Is it so far-fetched to imagine that a little modest doubt might bring people nearer to a peaceful resolution of differences? I'm thankful for anyone, like the youth with the quarter, who reminds me of how much I don't know.